afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Normally, you hear me broadcasting on Wednesdays. I had brain damage from being at BoucherCon, although it was a good kind of brain damage. So you'll excuse me that we've pushed the interviews back a day. I want to announce two new books that were all I had time to research. Paul Marx has a new book out. If you get a chance, go and check him out. And my guest today, Dietrich Kaltes, has also a new book called Poughkeepsie Shuffle. I am very happy to have Dietrich back on the show again. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He is he's from Canada. That's where he's calling from in today. He is an award-winning author of quite a few books. He's won for, I believe the books are for House of Blazes and for Ride the Lightning, although I have to say Triggerfish is just about my favorite book that he's written. But he also has nearly 50 short stories out there that have been published in e-zines and publications around the world. He is from Canada's West Coast. If you've not checked out his monthly blog at Off the Cuff, I highly recommend it. It's excellent. He also blogs weekly at Southern Criminal Minds. It is my pleasure to welcome back to Authors on the Air, author Dietrich Kaltes. Hi, Dietrich. How are you today?
Hi, Pam. Thanks for having me on.
I'm thrilled to have you here. First, let me say thank you for doing such a lovely review of the Betrayed anthology, which we published to raise money for domestic violence victims and their children. I so appreciate you doing a little post on me. It was very nice of you. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And that's up on our website if anybody wants to take a look at it. So you have a new book out, Poughkeepsie Shuffle, and of course, for those of listeners who've never read you, I want to just say your noir crime fiction is so much fun to read, but there's a little bit of controversy in the writing community for this particular subgenre about what noir actually is. In your opinion, how do you describe noir crime fiction?
You know, I guess it might be something different for everybody. For me, it's a darker, maybe something that has dark humor, sort of a gritty, you know, just a grittier story.
The characters
not
are kind of.
I'm
sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No,
again.
That's okay. Not even necessarily more violent, just sort of darker. It could be the characters; they're not as sort of squeaky clean, you know, and there's just sort of a grittier undertone to the stories. That's sort of what noir means to me, anyway.
Now, noir characters typically are not your black and white, either antagonist, protagonist, good guy, bad guys. They're kind of an everyman type of a character, aren't they? Filled with flaws and good characteristics too, but maybe their flaws kind of get in their way of living their life.
Yeah, that's the way I see them, and I kind of lean to those kind of characters because they're kind of unpredictable. You know, if a character is just good, he's maybe a little more obvious in how he's going to handle a situation. But if they're sort of in that gray area, you know, you're always rooting for them to do the right thing. They don't always do it, but it makes the story a little bit more real and the characters maybe a little bit more believable. And definitely you don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah. I mentioned that I like Triggerfish very, very much. I thought that was such an entertaining book, which I guess in the end, that's what you're writing about, even though Triggerfish was kind of a bigger thing involving cartel and everything else. It still, to me, is about, you know, some kind of everyman that has gotten in trouble. I really like the style of writing a lot. You are a prolific writer. You just like putting words on paper, don't you?
I do. You know, I kind of you know, I've kind of been this way all my life. Like, you know, I hear something and I think, well, what if this happened? And, you know, with story writing, it's like, well, if you take that seed of an idea and then say, well, what kind of a character fits into that? You drop them in and you just kind of let it go. You just see, you know, where the story goes by the characters as they develop. They, you know, they kind of flesh out and you're almost just following them along.
Yeah. Yeah, you're kind of, like you said, you're kind of hoping they'll do the right thing. You know, it occurs to me, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but a lot of people have tough choices to make just in everyday life. And, you know, somebody who's not quite at making ends meet and... their loved ones or even themselves. So any one of those people could actually be a character in one of your books, couldn't they?
That's right. It makes it more everyman, doesn't it? Where
it
lot of time, you know, I sometimes go, oh, why did I do that? You wish I had replanned. I'd do it a different way. And
sure.
You can see that in the characters. Sometimes it's obvious they're going down a wrong road. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and this goes back to, you know, if the character's not black and white, maybe you're not sure what they're going to do next. Becomes a little less predictable.
Well, so let's talk about Jeff Nichols, because he's an interesting character in that he really wants to do the right thing, because he's got his girlfriend waiting for him, and she's pretty ticked off at him because he's gone to jail. And so he takes this really horrible job, which even for in the best of times, is being a used car salesman. It's not the, you know, it's not what everybody, boys and girls grew up wishing they could do. So he's kind of caught between a rock and a hard place there, isn't he?
He is. You know, he's not the kind of guy who's going to take a 9-to-5 because he sees the limitations in that. So there's always this gold ring. And I think a commissioned sales job, well, what if I sell a lot of cars? And, of course, it doesn't work out that way. And then something else comes along by the smuggling operation. And, well, what if I get away with it? And, you know, he's trying to provide a better life for him and Anne. And, you know, he wants to buy a house, and Anne's, you know, clock is ticking, and she'd like to have kids and so on. And she's picturing the yard with the swing in the back. And he's just trying to do that. But, you know, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious he's going down a wrong road. But, you know, it's interesting, too, writing. This is the first time I've written a book in first person. And I had to put myself in Jeff's head to kind of tell the story. And, you know, he's so unreliable because he's kind of lying to himself as well as everybody else, right? So it was kind of interesting because it while it sort of limited the focus on that one character, it also sort of allowed a little bit more humor in that sense.
Sure.
You know, like when the in-laws come, you know, you're in Jeff's head and he doesn't really like them. And I thought that worked. So, that was why I did that way.
Well, it you know, of course they're not going to like him. It's his history and all, and he's trying to do, I mean, he's kind of like, somebody just give me a break. If someone gives me a break and it fits my personality, I'll do a great job. And there just really aren't that many breaks. There's not that many second chances for a guy who's coming out of jail. And
that's right.
You know, so this is really... It could be just about anyone, and I would imagine that there are a lot of really well-intentioned, just every man and woman out there who say, okay, I screwed up, but I'm really going to do better. I'm going to work my butt off and find that they're still falling behind, and they're trying to meet someone else's and their own expectations. I think it's a great character study. You know, it really points a spotlight on how, you know, there, but for the grace of God, you know, go I. And, you know, who has, I can't tell you how many times I've joked around with my friends. There used to be a drive-through, like a small dairy store here in Florida, and that was called Farm Stores. So you could drive through the window on one side or the other, and you'd get your pardon me, your eggs, your milk, and your bread, and maybe a half a gallon of ice cream. And I used to joke around saying, God, you know, things getting worse. I'm going to drive through Farm Stores and order a gallon of milk and all the money in the register. You know, you say it joking around,
yeah,
but
right.
There are people who do that. I mean, they go to the gas stations and the, you know, the 7-Elevens and everything and do that kind of stuff. Excuse me, I beg your pardon.
Yeah, see, and that's the way I usually think too, you know, like you get these ideas and, you know, people look at you, what's wrong with you, you know? I can see that. You get, you know, behind the lineup and you get behind somebody that's got coupons or something, you know. Well, you've got a gun in your pocket. Yeah.
Right. And they're counting out the big booklet of coupons. Or as I see some women nowadays in their big photo albums, you know, they got it all categorized and everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the make or break moment, isn't it? When you're standing behind someone and you're thinking, oh, come on, come on, come on. Let me get this over
that's
with.
That's right.
Or, no, this isn't such a good idea. You know, gives you just a second to think about it. And unfortunately, Jeff Nichols is the guy who says, screw it. I'm going to wait till she finishes with her coupons and pull the gun anyway.
Right.
You know, I love that you blog on some Southern Criminal Minds. I read everybody on there, but I'm really interested in your take on things. How do you, it's every single week. How do you come up with, well, it's biweekly for you, sorry. How do you decide what topics you're going to blog about?
We take turns writing questions. And,
really?
And sort of, yeah, just based on, you know, aspects of writing. And, you know, we sort of keep track of what's been asked and just try to come up with something new, something interesting. And if that doesn't work, just wing it.
Do you ever want to talk about current events? Does it ever make you crazy enough that you think, screw it, I'm just going to start talking current events because I have something to say?
I don't, you know, and it's funny, I usually keep away from current events. I don't read newspapers. I keep away from it, but it's funny. Every once in a while you'll catch, you know, a little nugget in a story, and a few of mine have come about or scenes have come about from something I've read. And again, and you think, well, what if I spun it this way? And, you know, you start rolling with it, like this story in Toronto. I mean, I read an article about a gun running ring that operated from upstate New York to Toronto. They eventually were taken down by the OPP, and I think there were some U.S. Bureaus there, too, that were involved. And that was interesting. And I wanted to tell a story set in Toronto around the time that I lived there. It was sort of colorful, or at least my memories of it sort of added the color, and then, you know, the research sort of filled in all the rest of it.
How long have you been writing?
Well, every day for a little better, I guess around 10 years, something like that. I penned a novel when I was, I think, 14.
Wow.
And I wrote it longhand. And, you know, I just sort of, I think I grew discouraged with it. And I think a lot of people do that. They try to write something and then it just doesn't work or whatever. Nobody will publish it, or they look at it the next day and hate what they wrote the day before, that kind of thing. And what I didn't realize then, and I wish I had of, is that you've got to keep doing it to sort of get to that point where you find a voice that you know, you get up the next day and you actually like what you wrote the day before.
Right.
So, to answer the question, I guess 10 years where I really, you know, called myself a writer.
How cool is that, though? I'm envious of anyone who can write. You know, I could barely get an email sent without a spelling error, so I'm envious. I guess that's why I'm such a big fangirl. You know, it's interesting that you said that about writing, though. As I'm back from BoucherCon, I had the great pleasure and honor of interviewing people who were just starting off in their writing careers, and then some mm-hmm. at the very top of their writing careers. And so with the authors who are very well known, I said, you know, what is your best piece of writing advice? And every single one, bar none, said, keep writing. Keep reading,
yeah.
And you have to read, and you have to
yep.
write, because how will you know how a story is supposed to be structured if you're not, if you don't read? You have to
absolutely.
Read.
Absolutely.
And even if you, whether you read to a or write to a word count, a set hours, or anything else, paragraphs, however you want to do it, just keep writing, because you can always go back and edit it. You know,
that's right.
Do you? Yeah. Do you know anyone who writes a first draft that ends up being their final draft? You know, it's like a one
Bukowski
and done.
I think Bukowski wrote like that, but I haven't met anybody that's done like a, you know, one draft, boom, and that's perfect.
It's
that's
out.
The way I want it.
It's
go,
crazy.
Yeah, three, sometimes even more than that. Like, you know, you just want it right. I mean, if it's right on the first one, that's fantastic. I think you do, you know, you just have to, like you said, you know, you just have to find what works for you.
Right.
And if it's a word count, that's fine. Other people, they, you know, they don't plot. They just wing it. Whatever works.
So
that's
let me ask you, I know you're a prolific reader as well as a prolific writer. Who do you like to read that I would be surprised to know?
Well, probably To Kill a Mockingbird is probably my favorite novel. I don't know if that would surprise you.
It does.
She had such a strong voice, and it's amazing. It probably wouldn't surprise you. I'm reading James Crumley right now, The Right Madness.
Really?
I just finished William Devereaux's Sing a Worried Song. And so, you know, there's different sort of paces, different types of stories.
Yes.
Some, you know, like Crumley's a little more gritty. Sarah Gruen's Water for Elephants. I love that
story.
Oh,
God. Magnificent book. Yeah.
It is. It's just brilliant.
I'm typically not a literary fiction reader. It's probably because I'm not smart enough to read it. But there are some that just capture me and won't let go. Do you have books like that you want to go back and maybe reread because they're so good?
Yes, I do reread books from time to time. I mean, there's always so many books you'll never, you never even come close to reading everything you'd like to read. But there are some that just demand to be read over, you know, maybe 5 years, 10 years. Maybe it's the voice, you know, the story, but
yes. You
want to hear that voice again. And
do you
for
pick
me,
up something different in the story each time, Dietrich, when you read it again? Do you see
do.
Something different? I do, too. And there are some books I reread every single year because they just call to me. And I think to myself, why didn't I catch that the first time around or the 10th time around? Really good writing is like that, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I find, you know, sometimes when I'm reading, like, if a book doesn't light me up, I probably put it down. But I've done that and then had a look at the same book maybe a year later, loved it. So it's where your head's at sometimes.
Well,
you're
not kidding. You know, that's true. I have I am blessed to have so many books. Being in this business allows me to see a lot of books way before they're published and by a lot of unknown authors, and it's an embarrassment of riches. Sometimes I'll read through the first chapter, and I just know I'm not going to like the story. If I can't connect to it, I can't connect to it. Very rarely do I go back to it, but sometimes I'll go and read reviews later on when I'm reorganizing all my bookshelves, and I'll think, you know, I think I'm going to try this. And I've been surprised. I surprised myself at how many times I was wrong about a story until I get into it, you know? And,
that's right.
And I think you have to be in a frame of mind too, don't you, to read? I read across genre, probably a little bit more genres than you do, but you know, I like science fiction. I like fantasy, urban fantasy. I read romance. I don't read historical anything, but I love every kind of crime fiction and suspense and thriller there is. So I find that I've made that mistake. I've put a book down and then heard about it again and went back and read it and just been blown away by it. So shame on me. But you know, you have to be in the right frame of mind, I think. You know, who has influenced you in your writing career, do you think?
I think as far as crime fiction, Elmore Leonard, George V. Higgins, James Crumley, Charles Williford, probably my favorite. And again, you know, that gritty style, there's humor under it. George Pelicano, somebody who's writing today, Don Winslow.
Boy, Winslow's amazing.
He is, yeah.
Really deep stuff, though. His books are hard for me to read because they're massive and they're so detail-oriented. So I have to really go slow. And I'm a person who, you know, I read your book in the afternoon. And it isn't because it wasn't, it was fantastic. I was riveted to it. I didn't want to put it down. But I can't read Don's, The Force, it's still sitting in front of me. I'm looking at it now. It's a massive book. And
it's a big
Pelicano's
book.
Pelicano's new book is actually brilliant. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's really good. Yeah.
And, of course, Elmore Leonard. There is no one who writes it better and with more snark than Elmore Leonard. I think joyfully, right?
Yeah. It's just off the cuff, right? Like it just
– Yeah.
It's like he's almost talking the book. It just sort of spills out, and it's so clever.
It is.
Yeah.
I think you were compared to him. You were compared as an original voice for Ride the Lightning, your debut novel, weren't you? The one that I know that you won an award for that. High praise indeed, and I think very well deserved. Do you like the editing process? Do you like to edit other people's stories?
Probably not what I'd want to do all the time, but it is kind of interesting. If you love a story, you know, I think to edit a story that you're not really into, I think for me that would be difficult. And I've tried to, I did edit a story for a friend, and somehow we managed to remain friends. It needed, I thought it needed some work. So it's so subjective, you know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't think I would want to do it. But
appreciate
it. You
edited an anthology, though, didn't you, from Crime Syndicate, I think?
No, that was just an issue, the second issue.
Oh, you just did an issue. Okay.
Yeah, okay. And it is. It's tough. It really is tough, and you have to set a lot of things aside, like personal taste and so on, and just allow that. Well, this is good in a different way, and just let's see where it goes, you know. So
yeah.
I probably would. I probably don't make a good editor.
How do you feel when people say, "Will you read and blurb my book for me?" It's kind
again,
of a hard thing to do, isn't it?
It can be, and it's hard to ask people to do it too. But I think you're lucky if you know a writer comes to you, and you know that they write the kind of books that you like to read. That's not a problem. You're probably happy to do it. If it's somebody new, you know, I guess it depends. You have to try and be honest with it too, right?
Yeah, I made a mistake of doing that. Didn't turn out well for me. I lost a friend.
Well,
I never do that anymore.
I think that might be the safer road. I'm a little busy right now.
And my answer is, I'm not an editor. And I don't want to beta read for anybody that I don't really know. And actually, I read someone's book once. I read the first book. It was lovely. It was a fantasy book. And the next book came and it was 860 pages. I said, "How many books is this?" She said, well, that's just one. And I said, have you run it by your editor yet? You know, and it was just horrible. And I, you know, oh. How do you, I mean, I was in tears trying to write an email saying, I can't do this. And she got really, her feelings hurt. And so I've just learned it's not a wise thing for me to do. I'd rather talk to people once their books are out, you know.
But, you know, sorry, go ahead.
No, you guys continue.
You know, it's really tough, but, you know, going back to, you know, you write a novel and you think, there it is. Now let's find somebody to publish it and so on. When you get rejection, you should really look at it like, well, maybe I'm just not ready yet. But if I keep going, maybe I can make this better or the next one will be better. And you just have to keep going. Like, you know, it's like anything, you know, it probably isn't going to come instantly. And it might take you years until you kind of get, you know, it's funny. I was writing short stories. And for me, I think that was the way to go because I tried different genres. I tried different styles. And one day I just, you know, one story that I wrote the day before, finished the day before, I reread it and I didn't hate it, which was unusual, you know, and I didn't ball it up and toss it at the trash can. I thought, this actually kind of really resonates. I really kind of like this. And what I realized now, I found my voice because I kept writing in that same style. And I think if a lot of people starting out, and again, it's different for everybody, but if you just keep going, you might find that you've stumbled onto that voice.
Right. That makes sense to me. Well, you know, I'm a reader, not a writer, and I'm not an editor, and I'm really not any good at that, and I'm worse if I don't like it. So I've learned my lesson, you know, when someone says, will you read in blurb? And I, you know, my head got real big, and I said, no, I can't do that anymore. I'm an interviewer. I admit, you know, I am a radio talk show host. I interview writers. I have no business editing or anything else for people, you know. So it was hard enough with the book that we published. I had to, you know, I asked professional editors to do it. It just wasn't up to me. That's not my forte. You know? What's next for you? What are you working on now?
Well, the next one is finished and it will be out next year. It's called Call Down the Thunder. It's it's set in Dust Bowl, Kansas, sort of in the 30s. So it's historical more than crime fiction, I think. But it's about a couple who are just trying to survive, and they have a very interesting way that they come up with of doing that. I'll just leave it at that. It's a little different. It's not. I guess it. You know, how much crime do you need? You know, in a story before it's a crime novel or it isn't? Because you know, even To Kill a Mockingbird really has some crime in it, right? Like
but you wouldn't consider crime fiction, exactly. Yeah,
no, exactly.
I like those kind of stories, though. To be honest with you. I like the fact that not every single one is crime. I guess that's why I liked Unloaded so much. It was crime without a gun, so that was real important to me.
Yeah.
I was turning around in my head talking to you today when I was thinking about you earlier. One of the things I'm always struck by is victims of crime and the way they are portrayed in books. And I always find that the victims of crime, you never know, particularly if it's a woman. And this, I may be wrong on this and maybe it's changing, but you really don't know a whole lot about that victim, or you only get a brief little flash of why that person has become a homicide victim. And certainly I don't recall seeing too many books where you hear what happens to survivors of crime unless they are the protagonist in the story.
Right.
What do you think about that? Yeah.
Well,
you're building this story around that. I'm always, because I'm a survivor of violent crime. And so that always, you know, I always think, wow, what happened to me wasn't obviously very much fun, but it also made me who I am today and made me such an advocate for women. And so I just wonder, why are more writers not portraying surviving victims in a more positive light?
You know, I think it depends on the type of stories. For me, that kind of story, I'm trying to think if usually the kind of stories I like, I think I need to see something where there's a light at the end of the tunnel, maybe, you know, and sort of this sort of natural opportunity for dark humor, because it's, and I don't know that kind of a story, even violent crime or the serial killer, like that kind of thing, the victim of that, to look at it that way, I think that's hard. That's, I don't know. I tend to sort of steer away from that, you know, wanting to write that kind of a story.
Yeah, I'd like
myself.
To see, you know, some kick-ass crime survivor come back and just say, all right, you know, you've ticked me off now, and I'm, you know, do you know what I'm saying?
Like a revenge story. And I think, I think that could work where I'm coming back, you know, I want restitution, or anybody else gets in my way, I'm going to look at this a different way. That could be interesting.
Yeah.
Where I'm
just always curious, you know, I want to see some strong survivors come back and take over the story. I don't want always the bad guy to win. Or I just don't want him to be killed at the end, you know, in some shoot 'em up. I want him to suffer a little bit. Maybe that's just me. But, you know, I always think, boy, payback would be nice for a change. And I don't know if people would be interested in a story like that either, DJ.
Oh,
I
think they would.
Yeah.
I think we'd love payback. You know, I think because a lot of us, we just go through day to day. We have to take, you know, crap from the boss sometimes. We have to, you know, things don't always work the way we want. So, you know, read a story like that where there's somebody's getting some payback in that kind of way. I think you're kind of rooting for that person, for that
character. Yeah, I think so too. You know, and it's like we started off talking. No one is either totally good or totally bad. We're not writing, we're not writing white hat, black hat type of thing. So will you please tell everyone where they can find you on the webs if they want to follow your blogs, your interviews, your stories, and just follow you in general?
Sure. Well, if you can spell the name, then you can find me at DietrichKaltheis.com. That's maybe easy enough. Facebook, Twitter, And as you mentioned, I blog at Seven Criminal Minds and my own Off the Cuff. And that's where you can find me.
I'm so glad you came on the show. I've really enjoyed talking to you today. And I hope at one of these days, you're heading off to book tour, correct? You're going to sign books. Where will you be?
Yeah. I'm going down to California. I will be... I could probably pull up a calendar faster than I can think of it, but I'm going to be at Lit Crawl in San
Francisco. Oh, fabulous. Wonderful.
Going to see Copperfield Books in Santa Rosa. Again, that's all on my website. Old Capitol Books in Monterey. I'm going to do a little workshop. We've got a Noir at the Bar in Monterey. That's going to be great. This is the second year we've put one together, and great turnouts. Noir at the Bars are great.
Well, you know, the one from BoucherCon was wild. It was screaming and yelling and wild, and of course the great Lawrence Bach read last, but it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. He's a great guy. Will you please come back sometime? Come back and come back and guest host. Pick somebody you want to talk to, and let's set that up as an in conversation. And good luck on the tour. I love the book, and thank you for being my guest today. I really enjoyed talking to you, dear.
Thank you for having me on, Pam. I really appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure. It's been my pleasure. And that's my first show. I'll be back in a little while with the second one. Go find the book. Thanks very much, everybody. And thank you, Mom and Dad. See you later.